from WCVB Channel 5 podcasts and SportsCenter 5. It's Take 5 with Chris Gasper.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Take 5 podcast. Today's guest, Greg Bedard of the Boston Sports Journal. Greg and I have a little bit of a disagreement on the role that Tom Brady has played in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers reaching Super Bowl 55. So Greg calls me a TB12 anon, basically saying I'm this crazy conspiracy theorist who ascribes all the success of the Buccaneers to Tom Brady. I look at it and I say, look, the guy's gone to 10 Super Bowls. He just took a team that had not made the playoffs since 2007 to the Super Bowl. So yeah, I'm going to give him a bunch of credit. So Greg and I debate that. Also, Greg has a really interesting take on what the Patriots can and can't do at quarterback this offseason. The quarterback carousel is spinning like crazy in the NFL, and Greg feels like when it stops, the Patriots might not necessarily have an obvious upgrade at quarterback. That's scary. And also, Greg Bedard, he goes on Felger and Maz a lot, and they call him the big boy. He's no stranger to food, knows his way around a plate. We ask him what his favorite Super Bowl spread is, what his favorite Super Bowl food is, and Ellen, that leads me to this. Somebody in your household is going on a very, very restrictive diet related to Tom Brady in the Super Bowl.
My boyfriend went on the TB12 diet for 1 week.
Ooh. Now, how did that go? How did that go?
It went miserably for me. And that's what's important. You take sugar out of someone's diet and they can't handle it.
It's true. It's very, very true. And that diet is really, really restrictive.
That diet is absolutely ridiculous. Like Tom Brady's actual diet, what he actually eats, is more restrictive than the TB12 diet. Like things are allowed on the TB12 diet that Tom Brady himself doesn't even eat, which just leads me to believe Tom Brady just doesn't like food that much.
Oh, that's an interesting take. Maybe he doesn't.
Like, you know those people who just eat to like fuel their bodies?
Yes.
They're not like passionate about what they're eating?
Yes.
That's what Tom is, because there's no way you enjoy life, you go through life happy on that kind of diet.
You know what my takeaway is from the experience you had with the TB12 diet and the times I've looked at? You have to have a lot of money to do this diet.
A lot of money.
Like, you can't do this diet on your own. You need somebody preparing these meals or, like, reminding you, like, okay, here are the ingredients. Basically, you need someone doing the shopping for you. I think it's really hard to just sort of pick this up on your own.
Yeah, a lot of money or a lot of time. You really have to ask yourself, like, do you want to be the greatest of all time or do you want to be happy?
I want to be the greatest of all time.
I want to be happy.
Okay. No, I want to be the greatest of all time. What's your take here on sort of Tom Brady? I know a lot of people, I did a poll on Twitter. I actually know how to do that. I know you're surprised. And 87% of the respondents said they were rooting for Brady in this Super Bowl. So where do you stand? Are you rooting for him or against him?
I mean, I'm rooting for him. I want him to do well. I think he's just like a good guy, you know, in general. And I don't really have a dog in the fight between the Bucs and, you know, Kansas City. But I think Kansas City is going to get it. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is the new Tom Brady. I'm sorry.
Oh, harsh words from one Ellen Fleming. All right. Well, coming up next, we're going to get some harsh words for me about my Tom Brady love from Greg Bedard. He's next.
Hey, Boston, let's talk sports. WCVB Sports Center 5, The Contact.
Source at MLB tells me.
Expert analysis.
That's going to be a major point of contention.
On air.
I talked to a high-ranking source.
And exclusive articles free on the WCVB app. Duke Castiglione, Chris Gasper, Bob Halloran, and special correspondent Mike
Once
Lynch.
Again,
the strongest team covering Boston's teams.
The only game in town.
WCVB Sports Center 5 on Boston's news leader.
All right, now, as promised, we're joined by Greg Bedard of Boston Sports Journal. Greg, how you doing today?
Good. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing well. So I know you and I disagree on how much credit Tom Brady should get for the Buccaneers going to their first Super Bowl since 2002. This was a team that had not made the playoffs since 2007. But I do want to start here, so I want you to be able to clarify your position. How much credit do you think Brady deserves for the Buccaneers advancing to the Super Bowl?
Okay, first of all, before we get going, I want to apologize in advance because I'm sure, knowing you, Christopher, you probably have charts and you know, pie graphs and other things to prove your point. And I will say, in my defense, as a husband and father of two, I've been running around all morning doing errands to get ready for the storm. So I do not have my rudimentary pie charts ready.
Hold on. You're saying I'm the pie chart guy? I mean, you use like Microsoft Access and Excel. Like, you're way ahead of me, but go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, but only for arithmetic. But anyway, so on Brady, I think he deserves a decent amount of credit. The way I view Brady this year is he is sort of the almost the final piece of the puzzle and a decently big piece, because I don't totally dismiss some of your points about how he has helped the Bucks in certain ways. You know, little tips here and there, the confidence he brings, certainly the way he started that NFC Championship game against the Packers with his first half, the first drive, the third down passes. There's no question in my mind that the team gained confidence because of that, and also just that he's Tom Brady. I don't discount that. I just think that some of you guys go a little bit over the top in terms of how much Brady meant. You know, I think it's possible that not many, but some other quarterbacks could have done what Brady did. But I look at Brady as the a very big cherry on top of a sundae that and I don't know this, but I think now looking back in hindsight, and trust me, I will fully admit I was wrong on this. I did not think this was possible. And I will defer to ignorance in my defense, because I did not study the Bucks. I didn't study enough. I didn't really care. You know, they're in the other conference. I only care about the Patriots. And so I didn't study them enough, but I know somebody who did, and that was Tom Brady. And he did a deep dive on them, and he told Jason Light and Bruce Arians when they talked to him, he said, "I think we can be special." And I think he was right. And I think that year two of Bruce Arians, basically that roster coming together, this was the right time for this team to take a leap. And we could view 7-9 in 2019 different ways, and I'm sure we do. But I think this team was ready to take a leap. I think they would have taken a leap with a decent number of quarterbacks. But that they're in the Super Bowl, I would probably say Brady is one of the bigger reasons for that. I don't know if they could have gotten here with somebody else, probably at least NFC Championship game. But that's sort of where I see Brady's credit in all this.
Yeah, so the way I sort of feel about it is, and this is where I know we fundamentally disagree, is I feel like what makes Brady special, where people missed on him to begin with as a sixth round pick, is that he has certain intangibles he brings to the table. And I'll just start with education of a coach. There's a passage in there where he's playing a preseason game, and Bill asks him what happened on this play. And Brady explains the whole play, and Bill's sort of doubting him, and he goes back and watches the film, and it happened exactly as Brady said it did in real time as he explained it to Bill. So I think when it comes to his processing power, his preparation, his heart, his mind, his leadership, there are these intangibles that to me have a tangible effect on winning. And where you and I disagree is, I think what makes Brady special and the GOAT, it's not just the numbers. It's not just that he can play any way you want, quarterback caretaker or quarterback gunslinger or somewhere in between. It's that he is the rare guy who, like an NBA player, can have an effect on the entire operation. That is very rare in football. You are right. It is the ultimate team sport. Normally, one guy can't really uplift a team or an organization, but I think he can, and he just inspires a degree of confidence and preparation in a franchise, and he's changed that culture, and I joke that you are a Brady climate denier, because I think he's changed the climate of that franchise, and that's where I give Brady maybe more credit than you do, because I don't think there's really any other quarterback who could change the culture like he did. Now, I think there's other guys who could do what he did on the field in terms of the 40 touchdown passes, but I don't think Matthew Stafford, who has four winning seasons in 12 years, and basically his sort of cop-out for his performance as a number one pick is people saying, well, you know, it was the Lions. You know, you got to give him a break. It was the Lions. What did you expect? Well, what I expect when you draft a guy number one is that he does change the culture and fortunes of an organization. Brady can do that. It's demonstrable. There's not a lot of other quarterbacks I can think of who can do that.
It's, you know, look, it's fair. And like you said, this is just where we'll disagree. And I totally agree with you on those things, like the anecdote that you mentioned. And, you know, one of my own is I remember talking to Bill O'Brien at one point, and he told me a story about how he's in the office grinding away. It's like March, mid-March. And he's grinding away on film and game plans and stuff for the next season. And he gets this call, and it's this weird area code that he doesn't recognize. And it was Brady in Costa Rica. And he called up to say, hey, you know, this practice that we're going to run on like May 15th, can we switch what we're doing here. I really want to work on this for the team for next year. Like, that's the stuff, obviously, that in my mind makes him the greatest of all time. Because he's just maniacal. When he felt appreciated, when he was being well paid, when he had proper weapons around him in New England, he was 365, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the starting NFL quarterback of the Patriots. And I think that is no doubt what has made him, you know, an ordinary athlete have an extraordinary career that'll probably be unmatched. You know, we'll see with Mahomes and whether he can stay healthy and whether he continues to have that desire that Brady has. That's another way he stands out. So there's no doubt that I think he's the greatest of all time, and his intangibles are just off the charts in many different ways. But I don't think that's what has made the Bucs a lot better this year, and I don't think it's made other teams better. Like, for example, like, you know, Nick Foles and the Eagles won a Super Bowl. Like, did Nick Foles have all these intangibles? And this is a guy who came up with the Eagles but then left but then came back. And did Nick Foles have all these intangibles that put the Eagles over the top? No, not in my opinion. Joe Flacco was an ordinary quarterback who won a Super Bowl.
He had an extraordinary postseason, though. He lit it up.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, you know, Rex Grossman went to a Super Bowl, you know, with a great defensive team. Yes. Sure, Donovan McNabb went to Super Bowls, you know, or a Super Bowl. So I understand what you're saying. I just think that Brady getting here with this team, to me, is not an example of anything, because I think there have been other quarterbacks with other teams who have gotten to this point and even won Super Bowls, and we don't talk about their intangibles.
Again, you know, you're right. Brady picked a pretty good team here. There's certainly talent.
But I'll give him. He's the GOAT GM at this armchair GM at this point.
Yeah, he's a little ahead of
Bill.
Now
I want him to run the Patriots in another franchise at some point.
Maybe he can be like the Don John Elway. Maybe a successful.
Oh yeah, a little longer. Of course he'll be much better than Elway, just like he was as a quarterback. He'll just dust John Elway off the field again.
But the thing I want to bring up about is, you know, we've seen a lot of teams with a lot of talent not live up to that Eagles dream team, basically any year of the Steelers. There are Ravens teams that don't do it. And the Patriots dynasty, in my mind, Greg, was built in part. That dynasty turned beating teams with more raw talent into a cottage industry. So I guess what I'm getting at is I don't just look at the talent and say, okay, they were a super talented team, so they were necessarily going to pop, because I see guys on that team like a Ryan Jensen, the center, who just are undisciplined and self-centered and selfish in their play. And Mike Evans, who I feel like if there's no stat in it for him, like he's kind of like, hey, if we win, that's great. If we lose, I'm bummed. But if I got my stats at the end of the day, it's okay. And I think the Buccaneers had a lot of those guys, and I think Brady changed that culture there. The other point I just want to make on the Buccaneers is that I actually think they had better weapons last year. And you might disagree with me on this, but I think people have forgotten how good Breshad Perriman was for them last year as a number three receiver. And they had a healthy O.J. Howard the whole year. So Antonio Brown's good. He's not what he used to be.
Chronic underachievers.
But he showed up midway through the year. But Perriman was good last year. You're right about the underachieving, but he was a very good number three receiver last year. O.J. Howard, I still think, is their best tight end, because people here were telling me Gronkowski is completely washed up and laughing at him in the first 5 weeks of the season. Now suddenly they're in the Super Bowl, and it's like, well, Tom went to a super team. I just think, and I'm not saying you're saying that, I just think that's a little bit of revisionist history around here when
totally
it's like, oh, he went to the super team with all these weapons. Well, which is it? I just think some people, a minority, and again, not you, of folks are looking to discredit Brady any way they can, and they are overstating how much talent is on that Bucs team.
I would agree with that a little bit. Certainly people are out to have an agenda against Tom. And, you know, we talked about on, you know, my podcast about, like, you know, I think over my career, I've been pretty down the middle between whether Brady or Belichick. And of course people are labeling me as a Belichick Bobo now for my Brady opinion. It has nothing to do with Belichick. Like, I'm not defending Bill in any way. I'm more of a teamist, and I just always will be. And it's because of, you know, the job that I've done for, you know, almost two decades in terms of, you know, it's been my job to get behind the scenes on NFL teams and see how they tick and why things work and why things don't work. But I do think, I think in hindsight, when we look at this, especially when some of the guys that have stood out to me watching a lot of film on this team, Donovan Smith, the left tackle, has been outstanding a lot of this season. He's a 2015 second round pick. Tristan Wirfs has been a lot better than I thought he was going to be initially at tackle. So he's had two really good tackles. Everybody knows about the offensive talent, but getting Vita Vea back is big in terms of the middle of their line. Golston has even played well at times. Devin White is an emerging star. He's just popped. He was a 2019. This is his second year. About midway point of the season, he has started to take off, and that happens. And him and Levante David have been great. Shaquille Barrett's has been almost a defensive player of the year. I think that the secondary has come on the second half of the season. So while I totally disagree with people who make it out that Brady went to a super team, and I don't think anybody who knows anything about football would say that, because we would have said it in the offseason. But I do think this is Jason Light has done a really good job as general manager. They have a really nice blend between young drafted guys, free agents who are making one final push. It's a really good team, and Brady certainly has played a factor in bringing it all together.
I want to switch it over to the Patriots now. And, yep. In Ian O'Connor's book, Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Coach of All Time, there was a quote from a Patriots assistant coach, an unnamed assistant coach, saying Belichick's system made Brady, not the other way around, and that the Patriots feel they could make the Super Bowl with any of the top 15 quarterbacks in the league. Do you still think that's the prevailing view in Foxborough after the 7-9 season? And how will that inform how Bill Belichick goes about filling the quarterback position this offseason?
I do think that they still believe that.
Really?
And yes. And actually, quite frankly, I'm not ready to let go of that. I will say, I don't listen to the, like you said that quote, and I sort of tune out on the, it was about the system and not Brady. See, because I just don't agree with that. Like, Brady, there's no way the Patriots go to their heights consistently as they did without Tom Brady. There's no way. And so he is certainly he's a big part of the success that the Patriots have had. But in terms of, because of the system, they can do it with any quarterback. I don't agree with that. I do think that they believe that. I think that they, and I'm quite frankly not ready to give up on them. I think they can win a Super Bowl with a top 15 quarterback in most years. I would agree with that. And they believe that, and I'm not ready to let go of it yet. And as far as this offseason, yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to overshoot for the moon like we just saw with Matthew Stafford.
They were way off on Stafford, at least in terms of what it would take. I mean, our buddy Burt Breer had a report that they were offering a second-round pick, and Carolina, with the eighth pick in the draft, was offering that. So, look, I wouldn't have given up the eighth pick in the draft, Greg, for Matthew Stafford, but if Bill thinks he's going to be able to sort of do it frugally at quarterback, just the supply and demand in the NFL, I think that's going to be a tough road. I mean, they were way off. The days of the Patriots having their own alternate universe market because they're winners and guys taking less and will give, that's over. Like, if you want a quarterback, you're going to have to pay for it either financially or in terms of draft capital or maybe both.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong with that. I just think that I would like to see it. And look, I blame Belichick for part of it, but I'm sure Belichick looks at the season and he's just like, well, we're just going to chalk it up. You know, like we've heard, his excuses, which I do think are just excuses. They could have made different decisions. Like you and I have talked about, that there was an opening. They had a chance. If they didn't tag Joe Tooney, they would have had another $15 million this year, which could have gotten you Marcus Mariota.
Love him.
And probably a decent tight end, some veteran tight end to plug. And then you see what happens. They could have done that. They did not. They just squatted on Joe Tooney. We'll see if there was any reason for that in terms of what they do with them this offseason. But I do think I would like to see it, like a top 10, 15 quarterback. Like, and I think Jimmy Garoppolo, even though Bill bred him and he's gone, like you've made, it's a valid point that Kyle Shanahan took him to a Super Bowl. So, you know, how great is the system if Kyle Shanahan did it? But I do think if Jimmy Garoppolo came back here, I think that and with more offensive talent around him and a couple things on defense, I do think the Patriots have a chance.
So I think at this point, I agree with you on Garoppolo. I think that the Patriots' quarterback fortunes are in a lot of ways tied to what happens with the 49ers. Do the 49ers either upgrade a quarterback with a veteran guy, a Deshaun Watson or an Aaron Rodgers, or do they fall in love with somebody in the draft, one of the top four guys, maybe somebody like Justin Fields or Trey Lance drops, and they're sitting there at 12, and maybe they just have to move up a little bit, and they have to use some draft capital, so they're willing to move up and do that, and one way they can recoup some of that draft capital is to trade Jimmy Garoppolo. I think Jimmy is far and away at this point the top realistic choice for the Patriots. Can you give me some other names? Because right now, with Stafford going to the Rams, I think the Patriots are at plan B at QB. I like Mariota, but you spent some time covering the Las Vegas Raiders, and we've spoken about this before. You actually think it's more likely that John Gruden would move on from another quarterback than from Mariota.
Yeah, I think they're much more likely to see Carr come available, because I think, and I don't know why they keep hanging on to him. I just know from studying the Raiders film last year, there would be games, multiple games that I would watch, and I would see what Gruden was trying to do scheme wise. He was calling the right offense for against the right defense, and the play would be made, and Carr just wouldn't throw the ball. But there was just something missing, and I was like, I didn't know how John Gruden just didn't, like, you know, throw something against the wall every time he watched the film to be like, I spent all week game planning that specific play, and then you don't pull the trigger. Like, what the hell are we doing here? And I think that's part of the reason why they did go and get Mariota, because they wanted an option. And I think when he got a chance last year without much preparation, I thought Mariota did a good job. And so I think at some point in time, I think the Raiders are waiting in the weeds sort of to let the initial wave of the quarterback market, Stafford, even though I think Watson's going to go on for a while if he is ever traded. I think that the Raiders are waiting for that to happen. You look at the teams that are desperate for quarterbacks. You have the Panthers, and a lot of people didn't think they were on the list with Teddy Bridgewater. Trust me, they are. I had been hearing that since about early December, that they want a lot better than Teddy Bridgewater, so they're very active. Of course, you have the Patriots, you have Washington, you have the Colts. So you have four teams that are just absolutely desperate for a starting quarterback. And then you have teams that might be looking at an upgrade. So I think right now the inventory, and I had this in my column yesterday, that are good starters. You have Deshaun Watson, Sam Darnold, Garoppolo, Carr, and Kirk Cousins, possibly. And if the 49ers don't jostle Jimmy loose, I don't know what they're going to do. Because I went through this. I was playing matchmaker with this. And the first time I went through, I didn't have anybody for the Patriots.
Wow.
In terms of either the draft or free agency. And I was like, they might have to end up with a Jameis or somebody like that.
Well, it could be your guy, Alex Smith. I mean, that would be the ultimate test of the system. Oh. I know you're not an Alex Smith guy. I like Alex Smith. I just think physically, obviously, he's not what he used to be. But Ellen,
real quick on that.
Yeah.
I just, if people haven't heard my explanation for this, it's not about Alex Smith in the way I reacted. Like, I'm fine with Alex Smith. And I would have been fine with Alex Smith this year. And he was on my list. You know, a healthy Alex Smith. I would have been fine with him as the bridge guy starting this past year. But my reaction was, please tell me the Patriots went through 2019 because Belichick knew something. Like, he saw the big chessboard in terms of the quarterbacks and say, look, it doesn't really matter what we have in 2019. We're going to be able to get a really good guy in 2020 because of X, Y, and Z. Because if it's Alex Smith in 2020, that means that 2019 was a complete waste. Sorry, it makes me irrationally angry.
No, I understand that. And speaking of irrationally angry, I want to bring in Ellen Fleming here, producer.
That's the greatest segue ever.
You're welcome, Ellen. Ellen, who would you like to see at quarterback for the Patriots? And I know you also have some thoughts on sort of the Deshaun Watson situation, which will definitely affect the Patriots moving forward, whether he gets moved or not, by former Patriots director of player personnel, Nick Caserio.
So first off, I want to be on the record because I want to be on the right side of history and say I agree with everything Greg has said and not what you have said, Chris.
About what? About Brady?
Brady versus Belichick, yes.
Okay, all right, that's fine.
Ellen's the greatest ever.
Again, as I said, speaking of irrationally angry,
you know, speaking of irrationally angry, I think the Patriots are going to try to risk it all simply for revenge purposes and get Jimmy. And I want Jimmy back.
I think a lot of Patriots fans do.
What's the biggest, like, F you to everyone than bringing in Jimmy, who was supposed to replace Brady in the first place, and then have him up against Brady at the end?
Yeah, you're right. And speaking of just irrational, I won't say angry, but irrational, there is an emotional, almost irrational attachment, I think, that Belichick has to Garoppolo. And I think that whether I've come around on him a little bit. I mean, again, I say Jimmy G. The G stands for Goff Plus. I think that Bill could win with him. I agree with that. And I think it doesn't matter whether other people think that. Bill thinks that. And that gives me some confidence that he feels that way. Okay. I've come around in that regard. My only point on it, though, is that, look, okay, Jimmy comes back. They're successful. That's good for all of us. We want to see the Patriots be successful again. It's more fun to cover. But in terms of Brady v. Belichick, which I love, I mean, it's the game on the schedule every week now that's not actually on the schedule, I don't think it changes or proves anything, because there's another coach in Kyle Shanahan and another system that babied and stage managed Jimmy to a Super Bowl. So that's my only point on that. But yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo's number one on my list of people that I would like to see in a Patriots uniform next year as the quarterback. And then, Ellen, I know you have some thoughts on Deshaun Watson and where that's maybe a little bit deeper than football, and we'll bring Greg on it too. Obviously, he's very disgruntled right now with that Texans organization.
Yeah, Greg, I want to get your thoughts, just because I mean, this must trace back. This isn't just something that happened and made him mad and now he's leaving. Like, this had to be the straw that broke the camel's back. And, you know, Bob McNair was quoted as saying, "We can't have the inmates running the prison," when it comes to regards of the Black Lives Matter protests in the NFL. He later apologized for that, and then he later said he regretted apologizing for that. Players are just increasingly more vocal. They seem to have much more say, and I think that's a lot to do with social media. But what are your thoughts when it comes to this kind of I feel like some people are painting Watson as being just like a disgruntled employee and like a spoiled kid, basically, because he wasn't involved in these conversations.
Yeah, as far as Bob McNair, he's done a lot worse things, and you could just, you know, go ahead and Google Bob McNair and racism and things like that. He's done a lot of that stuff over years. He's very right wing. Everybody was aware of that, you know, before his passing. I met Cal, and I think that, in terms of people that I've talked to down there, I think that Cal and this whole Jack Easterby thing is Cal, with his dad's passing, because his dad basically, you know, ran everything. He's just had a really tough time, and he was basically looking for another father figure, and in plopped Jack Easterby and all the things that he says. And now he's under a spell, and we've seen what happened. I don't think the Deshaun Watson stuff has anything to do with, the sort of the latent racism of the Houston Texans, over the years. I think it's purely that his agents, and a lot of this is agent driven, they see what's going on with the Texans. I think they also see, and this is where it really begins and ends with me, is that you're talking about a guy who won a 4-12 team, who fired their coach after four games, completed 70% of his passes, threw for 4,800 yards, had a ridiculous passer rating. It's one of the greatest irrelevant quarterback seasons in NFL history. It really is. I got to ask Aaron Schatz over at Football Outsiders for some of his numbers on this, but, like, you know, you could have made a legitimate case, and we've seen this in the other sports where guys on losing teams have won MVP trophies. I think you could make a legitimate case that Deshaun Watson is the MVP this year of the league in terms of what he did in Houston.
He led the league in passing yards and was second in passer rating. Only Aaron Rodgers, who's going to win the MVP, had a higher passer rating this year.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But I think that his agents just see that's not going to change anytime soon. It's not going to get any better now that Jack Easterby is in charge. And Jack Easterby, if he was really about what's in the best interest of Cal McNair, the Houston Texans, and his buddy Nick Caserio, he would publicly resign and drop off the face of the earth, maybe still consult behind the scenes. As long as he's there, and he's never going to give up power because he's never going to get another job in the NFL, so he's never going to leave. So that is not going to change. So Watson's agents are just like, you have to remove yourself because it is not going to get any better here. You're going to have a lot more seasons like this. Let's just move on and do it someplace else.
Wow, that's really interesting. I mean, it sounds like a very complicated situation there. Just quickly, before we segue to your Super Bowl thoughts, because I do want to get your thoughts from an inside football perspective on Super Bowl 55. Nobody is better at breaking down tape or a game than you. Yes or no, Deshaun Watson gets traded this offseason?
I think he does. I think they've gone to the mat. I know those guys over at Athletes First, his agency, and those guys, once they sort of stake a position, they do not relent. So, yes, I think he's going to be traded this offseason because I don't see – and Watson is principled enough. He doesn't care about money. He's one of the best young men that we have in this game. He is not going to relent just for a few bucks or what have you.
Wow, that's really interesting. I would say the deadline's probably the draft, April 29th. Here's an interesting nugget again from our guy, Albert Breer, the MMQB, a fellow Lincoln Sudbury alum, just like you.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Warriors.
The Warriors, creating some of the best football writers in America. But he had this nugget, and this is why I think Watson will be in demand, just besides the point that he's a transcendent, amazing quarterback. Bert had this: 22 quarterbacks drafted in the first round between 2009 and 2016. Exactly one remains with the team that drafted them. That guy, Carson Wentz, who's not exactly on solid ground in Philly. And also, Wentz is the NFL's fourth longest tenured QB. So if you're one of these teams, even if you like any of these top four quarterbacks in the draft, and I think a lot of teams do, Watson is a sure thing. These other guys are not. And that stat from Bert bears that out, and why Watson could be in demand and why somebody might put a Herschel Walker type bounty on the table for Deshaun Watson.
Yep.
So this is TB12 celebration week, also known as Super Bowl 55 week, but really it's just a week to celebrate Tom Brady, his greatness, his excellence, the fact that he graces us all, you know, every day that he's on the planet. When you look at this game between Ellen's shaking her head at me, when you look at this game between the Buccaneers and the Chiefs, these teams played in the regular season, November 29th. That was the last loss for Tampa. At that point, they were only 7-5, you know, before Tom was able to turn the whole team around, Greg. When you look at this one again, these teams played in the regular season. I did not think, Greg, that the final score was indicative of the game. I thought the Chiefs dominated Tampa, 27-24. It wasn't that close. 462 yards passing, 3 touchdowns from Mahomes. No answer for Tyreek Hill for Tampa Bay. He went nuts for Kansas City. 13 catches, 269, and 3 touchdowns. He had 207 yards. This is amazing. 207 yards just in the first quarter alone. So defensively, what can Tampa do differently to make this a game?
Well, they need Tom to work his defensive magic too. And now I'm not being facetious. I'm not making fun of you. I'm actually being truthful.
Oh, okay.
Like, they need to go to Tom and say, hey, what did the Patriots do? What was their plan against them? If he knows. I don't even know if he knows. But the Patriots have done a better job than anybody over the Chiefs with this iteration of their talent. And in terms of, you know, putting a safety over the top of Tyreek Hill and taking care of Travis Kelce on third down. Like, those are two things you must do if you're going to have a chance to hang with the Chiefs. And now, look, even the Patriots, the Chiefs are going to go on their run. You just have to limit how long it happens and when it does. They're going to need to keep Patrick Mahomes in the pocket. They're going to need to get after him, and then they're going to have to frustrate him with coverage on Hill and Kelce. But I will say, the Chiefs have done a really good job. They have obviously realized what the Patriots have done to them over the years. They have come up with answers to that, and it makes them that much tougher to defend.
So speaking of answers, looking at the other side of the ball, Tom Brady again, Steve Spagnuolo once again in the Super Bowl. Obviously, you go back to Super Bowl 42. Steve was the defensive coordinator for the Giants, and he slowed down arguably the greatest offense of all time. Again, as I mentioned, when these teams met, Tampa had some success running the football. Ronald Jones, 9-for-66. I think I'm going to blow your mind here, Greg. I actually think for the Buccaneers to win, this needs to be Ronald Jones Super Bowl MVP, not Tom Brady Super Bowl MVP. And I'll tell you why. I am not convinced, and I don't break down the film quite like you, but the little bit that I've watched and gone back and seen of that first game where Brady threw 2 picks, and just watching a lot of Tampa the last couple of weeks, I just am not convinced that they have any answers for Spagnuolo's pressure packages. And it seems to me the answers to the test and the Tampa offense when it comes to getting blitzed are to basically chuck and duck and throw these alley-oops on the outside to Mike Evans and hope for the best. And that's not going to work.
I agree with you. I think this is a really tough matchup for the Bucs offense. And like you've definitely pointed out, the Bucs have morphed offensively since we saw them in the Chiefs game, which was a lot of scat protection, basically just the 5 offensive linemen. And, you know, that's been the whole push and pull with Arian's system is, you know, when does it break? You know, what's the balance between keeping just the 5 offensive linemen in to protect and putting 5 receivers out so that you can get the ball out quickly and also deeper and attack the defense. That's sort of Bruce Arians' mentality, where I think where you definitely see Tom Brady's influence on this offense down the stretch has been they keep Gronkowski in almost all the time. He barely goes out for passes, only in the red zone. He blocks a lot. They keep the tight end on passes. They go a lot of max protection, especially when they want a deep pass. I think that's a big Brady influence, and I think that will help them here.
On the lighter side here, I know there's a very important question about the Super Bowl that Ellen wants to ask you, because you're not going to be down in Tampa, as many of us normally would be. A lot of people, due to COVID, unfortunately, aren't going down there. So you'll be at home in Chateau Bedard. And Ellen wants to ask you a very important question about your Super Bowl spread.
Yeah, I mean, I think people turn to this podcast to hear the hard truths and to figure out the divisive situations that we're dealing with in NFL. And so I need to know, if you had a top three Super Bowl football food spread, what would it be?
Ellen, as always, you ask the very important questions.
Yes, well, that's why I'm here. I know.
Exactly.
My back is hurting from carrying this podcast.
It's true. It's true.
Exactly. Well, number one, I'm a chicken wing guy. And so you have to have a spectacular chicken wing. And I'm not talking about, like, I'm not getting anything that's frozen or anything like that. And I'm certainly not making my own. I'm ordering out. PJ's Grill in Medway has tremendous. There's also this ramen place in Ashland that is spectacular, and they have great buffalo wings. So I would obviously order a tray of those from some.
Okay, we're going buffalo.
Yeah, I'm not an exotic type of wing sauce guy.
Okay,
Buffalo wing. I think you have to have a good pizza somewhere mixed in there, just as an option. I think that's sort of mandatory. And I also would like, if I had an optimal spread, I would have a really good, really fresh shrimp cocktail somewhere around.
Interesting.
You give me a mix of those three things.
Okay.
I'm pretty good.
I was concerned there wasn't going to be anything in the dipping category, which I feel like is very crucial to a spread, but I think shrimp cocktail could be considered a dip.
That's true. So I think, you know, here's what my spread is. I think that you definitely need to have some avocado ice cream. And you need to have like a really solid smoothie with TB12 protein powder. And I also think that you probably need to have
45.95 at TB12.com right now.
I also think you need to have like, you know, some really good nuts to snack on.
Like, and four almonds.
Not just like any nuts. Like, you need like an $80 bag of TB12 nuts for this game. So those are the things that I will have.
I mean, I'm shocked no one went with the buffalo chicken dip. I think that's the best. But, you know, to each their own.
That's because you're young and your metabolism still works. Greg and I are a little older and you can't. Exactly. Yeah. Greg, this was great. I really appreciate it. We didn't come to verbal blows over TB12. I feel like, you know, again, if the people running our country from a government standpoint could cross the aisle the way that you and I have on each other's podcasts, we all would be so much better off. Thanks, Greg. That's Greg Bedard of Boston Sports Journal. You can check him out at bostonsportsjournal.com. Also, listen to his podcast. I've been on it. Greg Bedard Patriots Podcast with Nick Cattles. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Take 5 Podcast. We appreciate it, as always. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the podcast so others can find it and enjoy it. And now you can email us at take5@wcvb.com. We'd love to get your feedback and hear your thoughts. We'll catch you next time.